Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk. According to reporting from a virtual fundraiser on Wednesday, former Vice President Joe Biden plans to announce his running mate around the 1st of August. And that means that we likely have about two more months of veep stakes speculation. But we're going to save that speculation for another day and ask a more fundamental question about this vice presidential choice, which is, what does the whole process of picking a VP actually teach us about Joe Biden, the candidate, and the Democratic Party as a whole? Now, as we discussed in the primaries project earlier this year, there's plenty of debate over how big of a role party elites should and do have in picking presidential nominees. But there is no debate when it comes to the vice president. The nominee and their circle get to pick the VP with no formal input from voters. And the considerations they take, the people they vet, and the person that they ultimately land on can teach us a lot about how they view themselves, their party, and the country. So here with me to dig into some of those questions are 538 senior politics writer Perry Bacon Jr. Hey, Perry, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And also here with us is political science professor at Marquette University and 538 contributor Julia Azari. Hey, Julia, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's begin with this broad question. Julia, and I'll throw it to you. What are nominees and their campaigns trying to accomplish when they pick a vice presidential candidate?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different considerations, and the number one consideration at this point in an election year is to win the election. What that can mean, we can break that down into a lot of different components of myth and fact about what the vice presidential nominee can do and about what kinds of strategies might be implied there. The other considerations are obviously what you might do when you get to office. So sometimes scholars think about this distinction as making a governing choice or making an electoral choice. And the third consideration, I think, actually has to do with the nominee themselves, right? So, you know, who does the nominee really want with them on the campaign trail? And there is a little bit of an it factor that's difficult to quantify that goes alongside all of these more rigorous empirical ideas, like who might appeal to different constituencies or who might be a useful person to have around if you win.
Perry, listening to those three considerations, electoral, who can actually govern, and then, you know, who you just get along with, how do you think the Biden campaign is weighing those different things in making this consideration?
Well, let me not speak for Julia, but I think there's a ticket balancing part of this that I think is important, right, Julia?
For sure. It's definitely part of the lore, yeah.
And I guess I would even say in this case is part of what's going on here is like you already had immediately Biden say before the process started, I'm going to pick a woman. I don't know if that has electoral and so on implications, but I think really what was going on was that was the party is a majority female party in terms of voters. So that was a consideration. So I think in this case, electoral is obviously mattering. Who Joe Biden likes is probably mattering, but I do think sort of balancing for the party is a lot of what's going on here. Like you see this push for Kamala Harris is essentially, there's a part of that case that is, we think black voters will turn out more or voted for the ticket more with Kamala Harris. But I think part of it is just purely black voters overall and minority voters are a big part of the party. So can we really have an all white ticket is part of what's going on. And part of what's going on is in terms of like you look at Senator Warren is that, you know, Biden is quote unquote more of a centrist or a moderate. So there's definitely a push along the lines of do you need to have to balance that out with a sort of more leftward person? And that is probably hurting Klobuchar a little bit because the thinking is like the Democratic Party is Biden sort of represents her politics as well. So I think there's a lot of things going on here, but I think a lot of the fighting is going on is about sort of which faction of the Democratic Party gets represented in the VP choice.
And when you say balancing, you said there's some electoral implications. Are people making considerations like if I select Elizabeth Warren as my vice presidential choice, that will turn out, for example, progressives, and if I choose Kamala Harris, that will turn out black voters? And if it's not that, what is underneath it all.
I actually think people are saying that because every argument in politics today is about electoral things. So Klobuchar supporters say we'll win the Midwest in Trump voters. Harris supporters say we'll get black voters to vote for us. Warren says progressives. I'm not saying all of these are not true, but I really think we're having debates over ideology and identity that are being masked through electoral contexts. In other words, some of the black women who want Kamala Harris on the ticket just think that the Democratic Party should have a black woman on the ticket sort of as a moral position because the Democratic Party has a lot of black women voters and a lot of black voters. Similarly, a lot of progressives think Warren should be on the ticket not because she's going to like help them win states necessarily, but because they think the party has a liberal part and a moderate part and the liberals deserve a person to go with the moderates getting Biden.
Yeah, so I think this all is accurate, and I want to put this in some context. One of the pieces here is I was thinking about this recently, is just how new the way that we think and talk about the demographics is. The idea of ticket balancing is a really old concept. And as Perry said, it's really rooted in balancing geography and ideology. People go back and forth about the extent to which that's happened in the modern era, before that, you know, whether it's effective. But like, you can understand the strategy, right? You pick someone from a region, you expect to deliver votes from that region because voters in that region have some kind of regional identity that's important politically. Same thing with ideological factions. But thinking about running mate diversity is a more recent concept, and it's a little bit separate from that in some ways. And obviously, it kind of looks like ticket balancing in this case because we have Biden and he's an older white man. And so that leads to this kind of strategic thinking about, well, how does he pick someone who's different from him to reach out to these different constituencies? Research suggests that that's not necessarily successful, that having a woman on the ticket doesn't necessarily make the ticket do better with women. But it also, if we go back into the recent history of considering women and considering people of color for a ticket, it's not really that same like balancing logic, right? It's about doing something. It's often framed in terms of doing something bold. And frankly, it's often done, and you saw this with Walter Mondale picking Geraldine Ferraro, with McCain picking Sarah Palin, and then with the kind of Cruz picking, doing this stunt right before he dropped out of the race in 2016, picking Carly Fiorina. It's kind of like, I'm going to do something crazy to draw lots of attention, and it's going to be putting a woman on the ticket. So it's like, it's a pretty problematic logic, I think. But I also think that there are kernels of that in what Biden is talking about, but there are also elements that are different than that are about, as Perry said, like reaching out to a party that where the majority of voters are women and some other kinds of broader justifications. But I think there's like multiple currents of history weighing down on this particular choice.
To key in on what the research actually says about how effective balancing a ticket is, when it comes to geography and ideology, you mentioned that there's maybe not that much support or evidence for it being successful. But what about when it comes to more identity or demographic factors? Is there research on that as well?
So to summarize that very quickly, there's some scholars who say if you're the governor from Michigan, you'll boost the ticket in Michigan by 2 to 3 points. And there's some scholars who say there really is no evidence that the geography even in state matters. And that's kind of that's the brief summary of that, right? The strongest effect is in your state, you might get 2 points or 3 points.
It's just tough because there aren't that many examples. And the literature on the vice presidency is good, but small. So there's a little bit of a debate on geography. And there are no running mates in the modern era who were sort of, you know, representative of communities of color. So there's no African-American, no Latino, et cetera. Women running mates don't seem to boost tickets with women. There's a little evidence. There's a new book about this. And there's a little evidence of some improvement with ideological identities, right? Like, so Paul Ryan helped that ticket with conservatives kind of thing.
Yeah. So why did Joe Biden commit to picking a woman as his running mate? You know, in the primary, Joe Biden did much better than, for example, Bernie Sanders amongst women. He currently has a double-digit lead with women over Trump nationally. So it doesn't really seem like an electoral strategy. And as you mentioned, the evidence wouldn't really suggest that it is a good electoral strategy for winning women. So what does he accomplish for himself, his campaign, or the party in general?
I mean, he got the news cycle from that debate, right? Like, that is the only thing anyone remembers from that debate. I am being serious, and it fits in with this larger pattern of women running mates being, like, kind of talking points for being a bold move. I think there's other stuff going on, but I think that's part of it.
I think it's just purely like a, I don't know, a diversity identity. It's like filling this need for, you know, it's not electoral, as you're saying. It might help electorally, but it's really about this kind of symbolic coalition. This is the party. And if you notice, Biden said, I'm going to pick a woman for vice president. He also, around the same time, said, I'm going to pick a black woman for the Supreme Court. So he was making sure to basically say, if it's not Harris or Abrams, then I'm representing that part of the party too. These things have electoral elements, and I don't want to dispute that, but I do think they're mainly about Joe Biden knows he's the white guy, and he won to some extent by saying, I'm electable, I'm palatable to people, and there's some white guyness embodied there. And I think he's aware of representing the Democratic Party the way it is. In some ways, if you think about it, like, you know, Barack Obama was kind of the left, diverse part of the party, and Joe Biden was the more moderate and white part when they were together. And now you're going to have a bit of a flip of that, is my suspicion, particularly if it's like Harris or Warren. You'll have somebody who's a woman and to the left of Biden, while Biden is to the right of them and a man.
The other thing I think is going on there is that there were several women in the field, and that was something that got talked about a lot. And the last nominee was a woman. And I think just for every piece of sentiment floating out there that part of Clinton's loss is because of sexism, there's also like this lost energy around that historic candidacy. So I think, again, all this context is really weighing on him.
So this gives us a kind of unique opportunity to assess how Biden and his circle, and considering that he's part of the party establishment, you can kind of say the Democratic Party apparatus is involved in making this choice to some extent, I think, but you can dispute that if you want. So given that, we get to compare how the Biden campaign and that whole circle sees the Democratic Party, what they think they have to do in order to represent it. And then, on the other hand, we have, what do we actually know empirically about who the Democratic Party is and what they want? And from your assessments looking at this situation, does it seem like those two things are pretty similar? Like, do the Democratic elites and the Democratic voters align when it comes to the vision of who they are and who they actually are?
That's a great question. I think that is less different than it is for Republicans. I think that there's probably an over-exaggeration from, based on Twitter, of like how angry the various progressive bases of the party are. At the same time, you know, Bernie Sanders has done well. Elizabeth Warren didn't do that well in these primaries, but, you know, it attracted a lot of attention. So there is a progressive wing of the party. I think it's easy to exaggerate in a media context how different these wings of the party are.
So what I might say is the elite discussion is different than my understanding of how voters are seeing this right now. Like, there's been some polling of black voters, for example, about who do you want to see as a VP. And there's not overwhelming numbers to say that black voters want Harris or Abrams. In fact, the polls mostly say they don't really care about the race of the person. And so I think Warren is doing well. Warren is doing well among black voters in terms of asking for VP. Warren is doing as well as Harris or Abrams is. So you have this elite discussion. Like, there was an op-ed in the Post by some black women strategists saying it must be Harris and this will motivate the Democratic Party and motivate black women. It's just not clear that's where the voters are. It seems like the voters are where they've been the whole time. We want to beat Trump. Joe Biden, pick somebody, whoever it is, we're good, let's go beat Trump. I think that's really where the voters are. There is a progressive part, because I think Warren is getting the most support when you ask Democrats who they like, but that's probably in part because she ran for president and was the most popular candidate. She was more popular than Harris, more popular than Klobuchar, and Abrams didn't run, but I don't think that tells us much. I just don't have a good sense. So I feel like there's a very elite, fraught discussion where the left wants their person, the black women want their person, the centrists want their person, but I think the voters are really quite there.
Is there anything that we can say empirically about where the voters are? You mentioned Elizabeth Warren, and I have seen some polling. I think recently there was presentation given by Democratic pollster Stan Greenberg, and then also some Politico polling showing that Warren boosted Biden's candidacy amongst younger people and also Black and Hispanic voters. Is that represented in other surveys? You know, we can't put too much stock in one poll.
The data that I have seen as well, I think Data Progress did a poll on this. You've seen some polling that basically suggests if you're thinking about, like, progressive voters, who do progressives like? And, like, who do Sanders supporters like? Who do people under 35 like? That does seem to suggest that Warren is the favorite of those people. On the other hand, if you poll, we haven't seen a lot of great polls of, are you a Obama-Trump voter? Are you a swing voter? My guess is that's not a particularly pro-Warren group. That might be a pro-Klobuchar group. We've not seen, so it depends on who you're, so if you're Joe Biden, one of your questions is my VP pick designed to inspire, make sure we don't have a depression among Democrats, we don't have low Black turnout, we don't have low youth turnout, or is my VP pick about, you know, about winning over more moderate voters, maybe more Trump voters? Because it's like a different, there's a different electoral strategy. It's like, if you're trying to win one way, it's Warren. If you're trying to win one way, it's another candidate. So it's not, some of these polls are, it's not surprising to me that more Democrats like Warren than Klobuchar. Warren is more left. But the question is that the voting pool you're actually looking at?
The other thing I would add about the voters is that there's a really, like, the evolving context of this campaign is pretty wild, really, right? So, I mean, Biden wins in kind of the pre-pandemic world for the most part. And almost immediately, things really change, including the economy. And it's possible that that has changed the way that voters in the Democratic Party are thinking about economic issues, which would be maybe one of the main splits. And it's not obvious to me that Democratic elites are going to immediately be attuned to that, maybe as much as they should be. But that's more speculation than based on surveys or.
I think you're seeing that a little bit is like, I think Warren's chances of becoming vice president have gone up the last 2 months because the coronavirus, she has all these plans. It seems like you need a policy person. And just looking at what, like, if you're looking at this week alone, in terms of, like, these police shootings you're seeing, the police violence, the things in Minnesota that are happening, Joe Biden's comments about, you know, to Charlemagne about race, it's hard in that environment to see him pick, this environment right now, to see him picking Amy Klobuchar over Kamala Harris for vice president. I just think the moment may change. We have till August. But I do think these discussions about where the Democratic Party's shortcomings are matter. And I think they are sort of, right now, they're probably more about, like, Black people and about progressivism than they were, I would say, in March.
Yeah. Is there anything we can say about Joe Biden's specific weaknesses that he or his campaign see in him as a candidate? Are there other shortcomings that he's trying to make up for here?
So it looks like in the polling that Biden is doing better than Clinton and really well among voters over 65. So, but my understanding is in the polling, he's doing about where Hillary was among people under 35. And so you'd want to boost that a little bit. I've heard some strategists tell me that he's not doing as well as he would want to with millennial, with Black men under 30, millennial Black men. So I think those would be places where I've been told that he's like, in other words, he's probably stronger than the average Democrat among older voters and maybe weaker among younger people. And so that might be a sense. So if you're looking, and I think his campaign knows this, if you're looking, it's not clear to me that necessarily Harris, Warren, or Klobuchar are great with young voters, but I think that's where I'd be looking for is they're trying to fill a spot. That's probably where it is.
One of the shortcomings that I think of when I think about Biden as a candidate is not just that he's older and he has lack of appeal with younger voters, but also, like, this gaffe proneness. I don't know if that's something you can really make up for in a vice president or how you would even do that on the campaign trail. What even is the campaign trail in 2020? But campaign skill is something that I think, again, it's hard to quantify, but makes sense to look for in a running mate of somebody who would be good on the national stage.
And when it comes to this sense that Biden isn't doing as well amongst young voters, are any of the options that he has before him clear plays to young voters other than Bernie Sanders, who isn't an option because he's not a woman? Because it seems all counterintuitive here a little bit in the sense that the person who attracted the young vote during the primary was not young at all.
Right.
And so this kind of one for one, like, if you choose Kamala Harris, you'll attract black voters. Perry, you mentioned it doesn't
seem to bear
out in the polling. If you choose a young candidate, they'll attract young voters, doesn't seem to bear out in the polling. So what does matter?
I think the polling does suggest Warren is a little more popular among younger people than the other, than Klobuchar is. I think that's pretty clear. But what I would say is we've only named three people here in this conversation. So part of the issue to me is that if Biden has a younger person problem, it's not clear to me why he's decided to like zone in on three senators over age 50. So that is, so as far as I know, there's not like a, I mean, I'm not saying you should pick AOC for vice president for a variety of reasons, but that said, I've not heard anybody in this whole discussion, maybe Stacey Abrams is a little better, but I've not heard anybody in this whole discussion throughout the last few months who screams to me, this person has a lot of appeal with younger people. Which suggests to me that either Biden thinks that's not the most important consideration, even though it might help electorally, or there's no obvious person who's qualified for vice president who also has a clear base of younger voters who's also a woman, et cetera. I just wonder, it's not like the Biden people see the same polls you do. I think they're fairly aware of like the young person potential problem. They had the primary. I just don't know if there's anybody who has a real base of young people, but because, you know, we just had a primary and Bernie won all the young people, so it's hard to say anybody else can do that or has demonstrated they can do that at least.
Yeah, it seems like what I'm extrapolating from how various candidates performed is that younger voters, at least in the Democratic context, are drawn to people who talk about change and who talk about moving away from the status quo, and they don't have strong feelings about what sort of package that person comes in. I mean, Pete Buttigieg also didn't do very well with younger voters, despite being the youngest person in the race. I do think it's notable that we're having this conversation and all these polls are about people, and they sort of assume that everyone has heard of these people. And that's because, you know, as Perry pointed out, several of them ran for president. That's helped their name recognition. People who get picked for vice president aren't always people who were like marquee national figures. And that can sometimes be, particularly with someone like Biden, who has run what I would say is like a little bit of a subtler campaign, or has like a sort of subtler campaign presence in some ways, and has a sort of gaffe problem. He may not want someone who's going to overshadow him on the trail. This is another one of those things that's very hard to quantify. But sometimes a vice president is not as large a figure as the presidential candidate. And so there may be people that are not being discussed because they don't have such a national profile, but who could fill that role very well.
Do we think it's any different than how it would traditionally be, the way that you've just described, because Joe Biden is so old? Is there any sense that voters care more about this VP pick because this person could run in 2024 for president? Or is that just something political nerds think about?
No, I think it's more about the health part. I think the McCain pick for Palin was bad in part because he's so old that, you know, and I think Biden can't pick somebody who's obviously sort of not ready for the job on day 16. But I think this 2024 thing, no, I don't think voters are engaged. You might be picking, Joe Biden is picking the person you're going to vote for in 2024 seems a little far off for people, I think, right? That's my guess. I haven't read a date on that. Julia, what do you think?
Yeah, I haven't really looked at data on this, but I think that's right. I think that maybe if he were a little bit younger, there would be less of an emphasis on the VP pick. But I think mostly what's going on in all this emphasis on the VP pick is about the many, many factors that were in play in this like huge, complicated Democratic primary that we just had that ended in this almost, you know, kind of abrupt and strange way. And so I think in some ways this is like just extending out that fight.
It seems like one of the arguments for giving the party apparatus a bigger role in choosing even presidential nominees, for example, is that they have a better idea of how candidates are able to govern, what experience they have, can they work with others in the party. So, like, given that that's an argument made for the party having a role in choosing the presidential nominee, what role does that actually play in choosing the vice presidential candidate?
I mean, I think historically that has I guess the most recent choices. Think about somebody like Joe Biden. Think about somebody like Paul Ryan. Those people were going to be very logical choices for governing because Joe Biden had been in the Senate all that time. He had a lot of relationships. Paul Ryan was well known on Capitol Hill. Even Mike Pence was chosen, I would argue, in part because Trump had never really governed in Washington, and Mike Pence was going to be a good governing partner because he knew the Republicans on the Hill really well. Tim Kaine was sort of well known in Washington. So I think in this context, though, what you're seeing is something different. You have these three senators at the top, and part of the problem is that how would they get along with other Democrats depends on what other Democrats we're talking about, because we're really sort of having a little bit of a proxy ideological battle, which is like a lot of, you know, some people are saying Elizabeth Warren won't get along well with us. That means they think she's too left. Some people think the same thing about Klobuchar. That means they think she's too right. Harris is sort of in the middle of that. But I think in part because the Democratic Party is split on what they want from the number two, it's not easy to say what they're looking for because we're really talking a lot about kind of an ideological direction choice, particularly because part of the context here is that we're not sure if Biden's going to run for a second term even. So this is really fraught in part because this is unusual where there's some thought that we're really also picking the person who will sort of have the front runner status in 2020. I don't speculate too much, but we're also picking someone who's going to have the front runner status as sort of the next leader of the Democratic Party.
Right, which is interesting because there was this assumption, I think, in 2008 when Biden himself was picked, that that was actually like avoiding that
right.
phenomenon, right? That he wasn't right. going to be the next person. I also think that William Adler and I have this paper looking at does the party decide and kind of what would be the, you know, what would it look like if they did? One of the assumptions that we make is that the party will probably want the vice presidential and presidential candidates to be further apart ideologically. And that the presidential candidate will want to sort of consolidate their ideological project and pick someone who's closer to them. And we find some evidence that that might be true, and it plays out differently for Republicans and Democrats. But it's not totally obvious to me that Joe Biden is a candidate who thinks he has an ideological project. This emergence of a kind of clear left centrist thing is fairly recent. And it's fairly recent in Biden's very long career. So while he's viewed, I think, as being a more centrist candidate, I don't think that's actually how he's thought of himself throughout his political
career.
Right, like he doesn't, I wouldn't say he necessarily thought of himself as a left-winger, right, but as someone in the center of the party. And that means that he's, I think, there, as Perry said, there's lots of different possibilities that opens up once you have a candidate that way.
Because I sort of think, like, if I had to predict, and I'm always wrong with everything, but the one thing about Harris is being discussed as an appealing pick because she's black and Asian, and I think that's relevant. But the one thing is, if you pick her, you're not making much of an ideological choice. She's done some left things. She's not as left as Bernie. Like, Warren sort of represents the left, and to some extent, Klobuchar is sort of known for being in the center, the way she campaigns. So if you pick Harris, you end up not choosing ideology. You sort of duck that conversation a little bit, and you may not piss anyone off too much. And there is some usefulness to her for that reason.
So we've started this conversation by saying people treat, you know, the campaigns, the party, they treat this decision like it's one that has electoral consequences. However, when you look at history, it may not. And so ultimately, we're learning more about who Joe Biden is as a politician, who his campaign is, and, you know, maybe the gap between the Democratic elites and the Democratic voters. So maybe this is all kind of an academic discussion anyway, but is there a way to actually measure whether or not you've made a good vice presidential choice?
I think there is some research that suggests that Palin hurt McCain, and that's because perceptions of McCain from voters went down after he chose Palin because that choice seemed reckless and stupid. So I do think I think there'll be some spot poll, like, okay, let's say Biden picked AOC. I do think there will be some spot polls that would immediately suggest, whoa, that was not a particularly smart thing to do. So polls would show that pick was pretty unpopular.
Also not constitutional, right?
Yeah, you're right. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm trying to think of somebody who was left, obviously left. But, you know, yes. Also, that would also be bad because it's unconstitutional. But I'm trying to think of somebody who's, like, left and clearly so and who would be sort of considered out of the mainstream. That was the example I was trying to give.
Yeah.
But so And so that's the thing where it'd be obvious, but I think in part because he's narrowed it down, or we think he's narrowed it down to like three senators and Whitmer, Abrams, all people who would seem traditionally qualified. I don't think it'll be easy for us to say he's made a bad decision in the immediate context after he's chosen somebody.
Right. Of the people we're talking about, they generally all, I'll say this, they all avoid the sort of Palin pitfall of being clearly unqualified and kind of unprepared. I think that there will be narratives about each pick and what it shows about what Biden values. And those may be very close to public opinion or very far away. They may be predictive of the election result or not. But there will be stories like, you know, I was reading a lot about Amy Klobuchar last night as I was watching things happen in Minneapolis. And, you know, fairly or not, if Klobuchar ended up being the pick, I think that would be the story, right? This shows how Biden thinks about these issues, is someone who does not have a great record in dealing with the Black community in Minnesota. And that story would be important. And that would be important and have an impact even if that ticket went on to win. And I think given how much attention the VP pick has gotten already before it's even happened, I think it will probably get quite a bit of attention after it does. And we may need some time to really assess the impact and the validity of those stories, but we'll certainly have a lot to pick from.
So in essence, whatever values or narrative the media yes. map onto the choice could ultimately affect how the public views the vice presidential candidate or Joe Biden himself as a candidate, in a sense?
Yeah, so if you pick Warren, the narrative from Biden you want is we picked an expert in the economy because we're in the middle of a recession and we need somebody who understands the economy. The bad narrative is you picked a radical leftist to placate the radical leftist Bernie people, and I think you'd get both of those. You pick Harris, one narrative you might be is the Democratic Party's obsessed with tokenism, so they picked a minority and a woman, and they did their check marks, and that's not great. The other is that you followed the news. There's huge racial inequality in our country. We've never had a Asian or Black running mate. You're inclusive to the country. She's a good speaker. She's a charismatic person. You know, there's a lot of things she has going for her. So you get that. The narrative about Klobuchar that Julia gave was one narrative, the sort of you don't care about minorities in Minnesota. That's a bad one. The good one is Amy Klobuchar is one of the most bipartisan people on Capitol Hill. She has a record of working with both parties. Joe and Amy are going to come to Washington and restore reduce partisanship, and they want to work for everybody, and they want to bring in and that's a good message if you're trying to win those Obama-Trump voters. So I think the coverage, I think you're right, Galen, the coverage of the pick is almost as important as the pick, and you almost have to think about what will the coverage be.
Oh, that'd be a great story.
This is really interesting. I kind of want to go through like every single different option and have you do the pro-con media narrative. That was good.
So the Abrams one is like she's never been anything beyond a state senator or state representative. How could Joe Biden, who is 78 years old, pick somebody who wasn't clearly really qualified and passed over these senators? The positive story is Stacey Abrams is an exciting, dynamic person who's younger than most of the people, almost won in Georgia, and is really like an exciting new face for Democrats. And I think those narratives are both sort of true in a certain way. Whitmer, you can imagine the exciting narrative too, along with she has a little bit less experience. I think she might get a little bit of the Abrams is a little bit more charismatic. I'm trying to think of who else is in. Those are the people that are sort of immediately jump to mind.
So in a lot of ways, it's a roundabout way in which this could matter, in that on its face, in a very direct way, it may not have a big electoral influence. But the media and the country will make assessments about Joe Biden himself and what they think of what the Democratic Party is and what they think of what the country is in how they choose this candidate.
That's what I think, is that it's almost, is it almost more the, in other words, the pick, I think Julie said this already, and some of the resources too, is the pick is important because it, what it says about the person at the top of the ticket, not really about the person at the bottom of the ticket who no one is really voting for. It's really like, what does this choice say about Joe Biden? And what does it tell us about his priorities, his identity, his view of the world, his view of what the problems are, and his view of his, who a good partner for him would be, because he's who we're voting for.
All right. Well, I think that's a great conversation for today. So thank you so much to both of you, Julia and Perry, for joining me.
All right. Thanks, Galen.
Yeah. Thank you.
My name is Galen Druk. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.